Good day. Welcome to the Corey Morgan Show. It's bloody winter again. Last weekend, I was doing my hive inspections on my bees. I was cleaning up the mess exposed as the snow melted from my dogs in the backyard. And now we're back into as much as a foot of snow or more coming into Alberta over the next week. Well, hopefully it's the last blast of this crap before spring really does come around. I've just never been a winter person. But hey, if you guys love it, good for you. I'm sick of it already. Either way, lots of other stuff to complain about besides the weather today. I'm going to have John Carpe come on a little while here. He's going to talk. He's from the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms. He's a lawyer, but don't hold that against him. He's done a lot of good things, and he's certainly got some good things to say about a bad thing, which is Bill C-63, which is out to police our speech and is just sort of an insane sort of bill being tabled by our federal masters in Ottawa. Good to see you there, Jordan and others. You know, use that comment scroll. I like seeing that. This can be interactive. You know, I do answer questions sometimes if I, you know, when I could pass them on to guests, throw them up there. I don't necessarily read them all out, but I see them all there and I appreciate it. Just try to keep civil with each other. You know, we can get on each other's cases without being over the top. All right, let's talk about something that's been in the news, things that are kind of getting rolling in Alberta, and it should happen in every province. We're talking about the question of having political parties in municipal elections. And boy, I tell you, municipal leaders are pretty worked up over the whole concept because it sounds like Premier Smith is going to bring in legislation to allow it. Now, the question these incumbent municipal politicians should be asking as they rally in opposition to allowing parties in municipal politics is, or what we should be asking them is, what are you afraid of? I mean, the case being made by Albertan mayors, Reeves, and councillors in opposition to these proposed changes is that nobody wants to see these parties. They're saying Albertans don't want it. So, okay, if that's the case, then you guys should have nothing to worry about. You'll be reelected as independent candidates, and the parties will just fade away into the sidelines, right? The reality is, countless municipal politicians have been taking advantage of the lack of party politics at the municipal level, coupled with the apathy of voters to get elected under false pretenses. I mean, we've got no means of vetting through a party nomination process, so candidates can disguise themselves as conservative-minded people when they're running for office. Of course, once they get elected, they tack hard left, and unfortunately, the frustrated electorate tends to stay home rather than vote these pretenders out of office. Former Calgary Mayor Nahed Nenshi is a prime example of that. Municipal politics in Alberta right now are a mess. Councils everywhere are fractured, at each other's throats, not getting anything done, while frustrated voters are trying things such as recall initiatives to get rid of these terrible politicians. I mean, look at Chestermere. The province had to actually step in and fire the mayor and council because they were too nutty to try and bring to a reasonable state of functional order. Would a party system cure all these ills in the municipal system? No, of course not. It wouldn't. But it sure would help. If candidates have a party allegiance tied to them, voters, people, and general citizens can get a better idea of where that candidate stands ideologically. Parties typically have a nomination process before endorsing candidates. If there's a contested nomination, we can rest assured that closet socialists are going to be exposed before they hit the ballot in the general election. Some of the less than mentally stable contenders for the job could probably be weeded out as well. I mean, we get a lot of good candidates running for office, but they lose the elections because they don't know how to run in them. And they don't have an organization behind them to help them along with it. With parties, candidates have a structure and a potential team to help them effectively contest the election. And then costs in campaigning, they can be reduced as candidates can share costs from constituency to constituency on things like branding, communications, printing, and even sharing campaign office space. With a party apparatus, candidates with limited campaign experience can still compete effectively for the role. Parties can also hold candidates accountable between elections. That's something we all dearly want. I mean, much like in other levels of government, a party can't remove a person from their elected position, nor should they be able to, but a party can refuse to endorse that candidate in the next election if the candidate deviates too far from the shared principles they said they held with the party. That ability, though, does reflect one of the potential downsides of a party system. I mean, to be fair, candidates could find themselves more inclined to answer to the party than their constituents, and that's not a good thing. It's a risk that should be mitigated through party policies, though. When municipal parties are formed, representatives will need to have the leeway to be able to represent their needs of the individual constituencies rather than always towing a party line. I mean, a suburban councillor, they're going to have different policies and priorities and needs than an inner city urban council would. And they should have the flexibility to represent those differences. With city and town councils having a small number of people within them, these councils a traditional party politics such as whip votes won't work anyways. Those problems, though, can and would be ironed out with an effective party. We can't pretend that parties don't exist in municipal politics already. Alberta unions put together a war chest of an estimated $1.7 million and gave it to a political action group called Calgary's Future in the last election. Now, that group's purpose was to elect a certain slate of candidates in the municipal election, and lo and behold, most of the candidates endorsed by the unions won their seats. You know what that's called? A party system. We already have it, guys. We'd be better served to make the system official and then make the parties transparent. Many of the municipal politicians currently howling and pissing and moaning over the advent of a party system in Alberta's municipal elections got elected with union support. They know full well they likely couldn't win re-election if they had to wear their union allegiance on their sleeves while competing for the job against other candidates running under a party banner. Their interest isn't that of Albertans. Their interest is in themselves. People often ask, why does Alberta vote conservatively, federally, and provincially, yet elects far-left politicians at the municipal level? Well, the main reason is the lack of parties at the municipal level. Leftists know they can't win through openly campaigning on their ideology. So they've gravitated to the level of politics where they can hide their leanings. And it's been an effective tactic on their part. And again, if it's true that Albertans truly don't want party politics in municipal elections, then these municipal politicians currently in power have nothing to worry about. Few would vote for those ghastly party-endorsed politicians anyways, right? So why are you guys so worried? It's the fact that these clowns are that worried that tells me exactly why we need those parties in municipal politics so much. I'm looking forward to seeing them coming along. All right, enough out of me. Let's see what else is going on out in the world. Check in with our news editor, Dave Naylor. Yeah, where are you, Dave? You should be there any moment now, and we'll talk about what's happening in the newsroom. Hey, Dave, how's it going?
Yeah, here I am, Corey. You enjoying the first full day of spring?
No. Sucks. It's cold. It's snowy. I don't like it.
It's going to get worse. It's going down to like minus 17. And lots more snow. So, but always remember, we always get more snow in March than any other month.
Well, I guess if it moisturizes the ground, I'd still rather have rain than this bloody snow, but I don't have to shovel rain.
Yep, very true. And the hives are looking good?
They were last weekend. Hopefully they bundled up for this next week and they're ready to get back in action next week.
Awesome. Looking forward to the honey delivery.
Yeah.
Yeah, a bit of a crazy morning here, Corey, with all sorts of political stuff going on. Leading the website right now is a story that will not surprise really anybody in the least. The federal government have found three more contractors, they say has committed fraud, basically, double timing and false work and stuff like that. So they've referred those three contract cases to the RCMP. So who would have guessed it, Corey? Pierre Poilievre, leader of the opposition, held a caucus meeting this morning where he announced the Tory motion on cutting the gas tax for April 1st will be a non-confidence motion, an economic motion. So that means if the Liberals lose, the government falls and we're into an election. Chances of that, pretty slim. Obviously, the NDP, not really ready for an election, will side with the Liberals. But puts Poilievre on good ground because he can now lay the feet of the affordability crisis directly on the NDP-Liberal coalition. We got some interesting video, Corey, of a couple of women. We decided to call them middle-aged. Some people in the newsroom wanted to call them grannies, raging grannies, but they were filmed vandalizing a recall Gondek sign. Some video yesterday, and they seem nonplussed at the fact that they were being videoed and are easily identified. They changed the sign to respect Gondek instead of recall Gondek. The police were called, and we do have a picture of the police on scene. They say they're investigating, and they'll let us know what happens out of that. And there's a Liberal MP called Housefeather, a Jewish chap, I believe, who was disgusted at the vote over the NDP motion in on the Palestinian stuff on the other night. He says he might consider leaving the Liberal Party. But, you know, today he showed his colors and said he's going to support the government on the GST motion. So I don't really see him going anywhere. So
no, if he hasn't left by now, he's not
going to. He's not going to. Corey, if you could commit me or permit me a personal moment here. It's a big day coming up tomorrow in my family. In 1964, a small church in Sheffield, Velia Cook became Velia Naylor when she married my dad. and they didn't really have a reception or a first dance. They wanted to get to Paris quickly as they could on their honeymoon, so off they went. 2 years later, the handsomest baby boy in the world came around. That's me, not him. Nico's showing on the thing. My sister came 2 years later. They immigrated to Canada, and the rest is history. So Mike and Velia Naylor have had two kids, five grandchildren, and now their first great grandchild. So tomorrow is their 60th wedding anniversary. Corey, really an incredible achievement. I just want to say congratulations, Mom and Dad. Love you very much.
Right on. Yes. Congratulations, Mike and Velia. That 60 years, that's quite an accomplishment. I mean, we can even forgive them for having produced you.
Oh, ouch, Corey. You hurt my feeling.
I got to get some heat into this office. It's cold out today.
It is. So, yeah. Happy anniversary, Mom and Dad.
It is fantastic. Right on. Well, thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
See you in a while in the newsroom. So again, yeah, lots breaking, lots going on, as Dave laid out. This one I like to remind everybody, the reason we can do this, the reason we can keep Dave employed, myself and all the rest of us here, is because you guys have subscribed. So subscribe, guys, Western Standard Online or westernstandard.news/subscription. And for $9.99 a month, you can get full access past the paywall. And it helps support us, keeps us independent. We aren't taking tax dollars. We won't take tax dollars. And that way, we answer to you. So if you've subscribed already, thank you very much, guys. And if you haven't yet, come on, get on there and encourage some other people to do it. I mean, come on, the state of legacy media is terrible, and we do need to fix it up. And again, congratulations, Mike and Velia. 60 years. I mean, really, we don't see enough of that these days of people making it that long. My Jane and I got married later in life. So, I mean, if we make it to 60, boy, I'm going to be really old by the time we get there. We can hope for the best, but I don't think I'll make that landmark. All right, let's see. I see Mr. Carpe in the waiting room already, and I sure really do want to have this conversation. So if he's ready to roll, let's pull John in here and have a talk about C-63. So this is John Carpe of the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedom. So, hi, John. How are you doing?
I'm well, Corey. How are you?
Very good. Thanks. Aside from, you know, whining about the weather.
The farmers need the moisture. I pray for the farmers.
Yeah, we'll try and look at
it. Even the snowfall, apparently 1 centimeter of snow translates into only 1 millimeter of rain. So they need lots more moisture to have a good crop this year.
Yeah, but I'm still going to complain about it.
Okay.
It is a good thing. So something else we can certainly complain about, though, C-63. Boy, that's a monster that's been dropped on us. Could I guess kind of try and explain a little about what this bill is and what's behind it?
Well, it was introduced in late February. It brings back the powers to the Canadian Human Rights Commission to prosecute people over non-criminal hate speech, and hate is subjective. It's defined subjectively by, whatever bureaucrats in charge of the prosecution. And it also adds a new section to the Criminal Code of Canada, whereby a person can be ordered to wear an ankle bracelet and observe a curfew and live under house arrest, give up their legally owned, legally acquired firearms, etc., based on somebody saying that they fear that person is going to commit a hate speech crime, and then you would be hauled before a provincial court judge. And if the judge believes that there's reasonable grounds for that fear, again, we're talking about not something you're doing, but a speech crime that you have not even committed, but that you might commit. And if the judge feels that you might commit violate the criminal code, hate speech provisions, all of those restrictions, being put under house arrest, etc., can be placed on a person. And if the person doesn't agree with those conditions and abide by them, that person can face up to 2 years in jail. So this is very Orwellian to have a new provision in the criminal code where you can be punished for a crime that you might commit in future.
Well, yeah. And I mean, there's a few things we could cover on this bill, and that's probably the most odious of them all, but it just seems so beyond the pale. I mean, I imagine the second, if that bill passed as it is, and if somebody was, you know, essentially restrained on a potential thought crime, you know, lawyers such as yourself and others would be in there within seconds to challenge that in the courts. I mean, would a judge hold that up? It just seems that they've crossed the line too far for even the most liberal of judges to support.
Well, it's the fear factor, and the online harms bill, if passed in its current form, or even if passed with some of the worst provisions removed, it's going to get most Canadians to self-censor. You know, you and I and a number of other people would probably just continue on our merry way and speak our minds. But for a lot of other people, if public advocacy is not your full-time job, a lot of other Canadians will fear getting even an anonymous complaint is allowed under the Online Harms Act, so that you don't have a right to face your accuser or question your accuser or have your lawyer ask questions of your accuser or even know who your accuser is. That's a provision allowing for anonymous complaints. So you could have somebody in Vancouver that sees something online posted by a woman in Nova Scotia who is making some disparaging remarks about a mosque in Toronto. And even if the members of that mosque in Toronto are not offended by the comment, this complaint could go ahead anonymously against this woman in Nova Scotia. And then she's at the mercy of a human rights commission that's going to decide subjectively whether or not she said something hateful. And if convicted, she could be ordered to pay up to $50,000 to the federal government. And in addition to that, pay up to $20,000 to the members of the mosque in Toronto. So these are draconian powers. It's even worse than what we had previously with the Section 13 of the Canadian Human Rights Act.
Well, it's good. I was going to bring up Section 13. And yes, it was like the commissions overstepped so grossly, so badly about 10, 15 years ago that, you know, Prime Minister of the time, Harper, later on was able to get Section 13 out of there, which was just too broad, and people were getting abused by these commissions. I mean, you don't have, as you said, the remedies that you would in a regular courtroom. These things were turning into kangaroo courts. I mean, the former owner of the original, you know, Western Standard, Ezra Levant, had published those cartoons in it and was brought before the Human Rights Commissions. No criminal charges, just these commissions. And this bill looks like it's going to empower these commissions back to where they were and maybe even further. So, as you said, it'll be chilling and we should all be very worried.
Well, it's important for people to contact their member of parliament. You could argue that it's even more important if your member of parliament is Liberal or NDP because they've got the majority to get this through. But contrary to what some people think, MPs do listen if they get a lot of phone calls and a lot of emails on an issue and they're worried about their re-election, it's going to make for some changes within those two parties because they do have the majority in the House. The other thing we're doing to fight back is we have an online petition, which as of right now has just shy of 50,000 signatures. We're going to look for another 50,000 signatures in the weeks ahead, and those will be delivered to the Prime Minister's office in Ottawa in April. So people can find us at www.jccf, F as in freedom, jccf.ca, and please sign the petition. The other really worrisome thing is that this legislation gives powers to the federal cabinet to create censorship regulations that will apply to all social media services in Canada. And then there will be the creation of a digital safety commission. Watch out for things that have the word safety in them. During the French Revolution, it was the Committee for Public Safety that chopped off the heads of thousands of people. So we're going to have a digital safety commission to enforce those regulations, and those regulations will be made in secret by the federal cabinet without any input from parliament.
Yeah, this stuff is just going down the realm of crazy train. And this bill, I looked at it, I mean, it has hundreds of pages. Unfortunately, it's like an omnibus piece. It's got a lot packed in there, most of it bad. Another part that I saw was some of the penalties they're proposing are again, just beyond the pale. This bill outright prescribes as much as a life sentence, which we can't even get for murderers quite often in this country, but a life sentence if somebody promotes genocide. And we're in the midst of a discussion of, I mean, some people say that if you say that Israel has the right to defend itself, you're supporting genocide. Or if you deny that there's bodies buried in Kamloops, you support genocide. So by theory, you're putting yourself at risk of a life sentence. Again, isn't this the sort of thing that most judges would say, look, we can't apply a sentence this heavy on such a relatively minor offense, if indeed it's an offense?
Well, currently the criminal code provides for a maximum penalty of 5 years in jail for publicly advocating for genocide. So they want to increase that from a five-year maximum to life in prison as the maximum. Consider the fact that currently the criminal code for sexually assaulting a minor under the age of 16, the maximum penalty is 14 years in prison. So it seems like the federal cabinet thinks that advocating for genocide, warranting potentially life imprisonment, is worse than raping a child, which would get you a maximum of 14 years in prison.
I mean, the priorities are just skewed. And something else they did politically, though, I noticed they put it at the top of the bill. When I started reading the bill, at first it didn't seem quite so bad. Okay, they're talking about bringing in some more stuff to go after people who were hosting child porn. Okay, everybody's disgusted with that. I could support going after those perverts. But the problem is, once you get past that, that's where they drop all of the rest of the garbage into this bill. Do you think maybe it's possible to, you know, kind of clip off the first few pages of this bill and pass it and then just get rid of all the rest?
Well, the things that the Online Harms Act claims to address are already criminal. So, for example, posting revenge porn online is currently already a criminal code offense. Posting an intimate image of somebody without their consent is a criminal offense. The willful promotion of hatred is a criminal offense. Advocating for genocide is a criminal offense. Advocating for violence or terrorism or the violent overthrow of the government of Canada is already a criminal offense. Encouraging anybody to violate the criminal code is already a criminal offense in and of itself. If I tell you, you know, Corey, you should go shoplifting tomorrow, and if I was serious about it, I've already committed a crime. So this is just adding on a thick layer of vague human rights laws to further chill speech when the problems, which are real, are already being addressed by the Criminal Code of Canada.
Yeah, well, and it takes away from people committing real crimes. I mean, if we're using our resources going after some ding-dong who posted something offensive on social media somewhere, meanwhile, we do have some people that might be standing on a street corner, you know, trying to scream and gather people to assault or harm an identifiable group. I mean, we only have so many resources to track them down. I mean, there are real crimes out there, but we're spreading this so thin, going after anybody and everybody that says something online, we're going to run out of resources to get the real criminals.
Yeah, this builds on the prior bills, Bill C-11 and C-18, and it's a gradual government takeover of the internet, and it's a step-by-step-by-step. This online harms bill, in my view, it's not just a step in the wrong direction, it's a great leap in the wrong direction, and it's going to do more to harm our freedom of expression than the prior bills, C-11 and C-18, which are a little bit more subtle and indirect, but they're also a threat to our free expression.
Well, so this bill has been tabled. Now, there are some people saying, though, I mean, the way the government works and how fast it works is the chances of this bill getting all three readings and then royal assent and through the Senate by the time the next election's held are pretty slim. And we shouldn't have to rely on this thing dying on the order paper. But if the government's in a hurry, they can get this thing through fast if they want to, right?
Well, and you and I have seen this many times, both provincially and federally. When a government is hell-bent on getting a certain bill through, they will bang, 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 first reading, second reading, third reading, and they will use their majority to cut off debate. They will use their majority to see to it that there is not a parliamentary hearings, which is normal with many, many bills. You've got an all-party committee of MPs that reflects the composition of the House of Commons, and you have witnesses, you have testimony, and you have, you know, the way it should be, a very thoughtful process with plenty of opportunity for public participation. Hopefully the government will allow that, but if they choose not to, they could rush this through in 48 to 72 hours if they wanted to. So it's really crucial for people to contact their MP immediately by phone or email, sign the petition, and spread the word.
Yeah, well, and you know, this sort of thing. I mean, I can already see how they're politically framing it. I mean, in putting the anti-child porn stuff at the top, as soon as anybody comes out in opposition to this bill, they're going to turn around and say, well, you support the publishing of images of minors online, you know, pornographic images. How dare you, you vile person. But I think the electorate maybe is finally starting to see through this crap, aren't they?
Well, I hope so. The other thing that's already criminal is threats and intimidation. So part of what they bring forward is we have to prevent nasty people on the internet from bullying children or from encouraging children to self-harm. That too is already covered by existing laws. And the other thing the bill completely forgets about is that a big part of the solution to children getting harmed online is for parents to ensure that their kids are not glued to a computer screen or an iPhone or a smartphone, whatever. It's up to parents to make sure that to protect their children by not giving their children unlimited and unsupervised access to the internet and social media. And that's a huge part of the solution. But the government likes to pretend that parents are not big players. So it's up to the government to be the big parent to look after these things. When really the first part and the major part of the solution to protecting children from online harm lies with the parents. I'm not saying we shouldn't also have appropriate criminal code provisions as we do. But the big thing is for parents to assume responsibility for what their kids are seeing online.
Yeah. I mean, I don't, this is a government that can't even get their own payroll system right. I don't want to entrust them with the ability or the task of raising our children. They'll only make a mess of it. If anything, they should be empowering parents and encouraging parents to get in more involved in their children's, you know, growth and development. I mean, it's a tough task and a lot of opinions, and that this just gets all the more intrusive. And when you take responsibility away from others, it'll probably just make the problem worse.
That's what's likely to happen.
Well, I guess before I let you go, so you're doing a petition with the JCCF. Have you guys, I guess you can't really challenge a bill that hasn't even been passed yet, but have you got other actions planned aside from that? Or for now, you're advocating kind of and just gathering the steam that hopefully you can shut this down in its tracks. But I imagine if the bill goes through, then you'll get to work on other things too.
Well, we will be, our team of lawyers and paralegals, as well as communication staff, we will be submitting at least one brief, possibly more, to the MPs outlining very specifically why this legislation is harmful and how it unjustifiably violates the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And yes, we are looking at, once it's proclaimed into force, we would look for the weakest, the worst provisions, particularly the one about preemptive punishment of people who have committed no crime. That is one that we would seriously consider taking to court immediately, even before the harm comes from it.
Great. Well, I guess before I let you go then, you know, I know you guys do a lot more. You've had a lot of actions over the years, and you've done a lot of great things with your organization, with the you know, standing up for our constitutional freedoms, as is in the name of your organization. So where can people find it to take part in the petition or donate? I see one of our commenters saying he's a monthly donor for you guys, and a lot of people really appreciate your work.
Well, we do rely entirely on voluntary donations from Canadians, and we're a registered charity. We issue official tax receipts. Donations can be made online at www.jccf.ca, and there's a snail mail address there. If you want to mail in a check, we happily accept those as well.
Great. Well, thank you very much for coming on today to talk to us, John, and for the work you guys are doing. Let's hope maybe this thing just gets put to rest. But I mean, if we aren't on guard, we know that we can see that this government wants to slip these things through. So it's going to be an ongoing fight.
Well, thanks for having me on your show, Corey.
Great. I hope we can talk again soon, John. Thanks. So just one more time, that is John Carpe with the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms. And yes, they're doing very important work, and they do need support. These guys are funded by donors, and they're standing up for some very, very important rights. And this bill is just, again, it's beyond the pale. You know, I mean, I'm a pretty cynical guy. I tend to expect the worst out of government. And still, they managed to surprise me with how far they will go. This is a government obsessed with controlling our communications, with controlling our speech, with controlling our actions. This is an authoritarian government. you know, people talk about it's the left, it's the right. I tend to lean one way or another, but the bigger, it's not the conservatism or the socialism or the leftism or rightism. It's the authoritarianism you should be afraid of, folks. That's the one. Doesn't matter whether it's right or left. If the government's got control of your life, you're in trouble. And this is how they do it. They do it incrementally. They do it through bills like this. And this bill is something else. If a bill this bad can get through, we're in far worse trouble than I even imagined. And, you know, I'm raising the alarms quite often about trouble we're in. So, again, let's, you know, thanks to John and others who are out there working to, because we do have a court system, we have remedies to try and push back and fight these things, and it's very important. All right. A guest I've had on a couple of times before, I've seen him on the news lately, Don Sharp, you might remember him. He's a retired paramedic, fantastic guy. And he's really been advocating and lobbying, to try and reform Alberta's paramedic system, because it's a mess. You know, we have a lot of stuff going on. And as much as Premier Smith has even talked about a lot of solutions, to end the hallway care, to end the wasteful use of ambulances for non-urgent patient transfers and everything, it seems like the powers that be are dragging their feet. They're fighting this. They're, trying to keep change from coming through. And Don's keeping the pressure on. And hopefully, I think part of the problem is the provincial government wants to move on this, but they got their irons in 100 fires. They're having trouble keeping up. But we're looking at some of these numbers. I mean, it's 2023, so this is during the time of the UCP government. Can't blame this on Notley or even Kenny so much. The Calgary Rural Zone, that's where I live. I live just outside of Calgary in Prittis. And our ambulance is almost never in Prittis because it's always being pulled into Calgary to do Calgarian services. And often those are doing non-urgent patient transfers. That means the patient isn't in an emergency situation. They're moving them from a hospital to a care center or a hospital to a hospital. And, a lot of these could actually be done in taxis, to be honest, but everybody's so liability averse that, we can't do that. What if the person, gets ill en route? But also we do not need a fully, staffed truck with paramedics tied up for a non-urgent patient transfer, much less stealing them from the rural areas. And it's still happening. We've been talking about it. One of the solutions was talking about having other private providers, use ambulances. And I mean, different, they're still skilled, trained people for these patient transfers. So we can keep the other AHS ambulances on the road for the emergencies, for the car accidents, for the dog maulings, and all the other things that they so important work that they do. Yet, in 2023, 1,178 times rural ambulances were pulled away to do non-urgent patient transfers, which meant we had no ambulance coverage. There was no ambulance available because they're in Calgary doing a non-urgent one. And these companies, they're very good. I mean, one is Aaron Paramedical. For whatever reason, their contract was just dropped to do these things. And I think they've got an announcement coming soon that there's one other company they might approve. Because see, what they did is said, okay, we'll allow these private providers to come in and do these patient transfers and some other services. But then they brought in all of these requirements, these ridiculous requirements. They have to take part in the dispatch system and all this other junk. Seriously, you can use a cell phone system nowadays to do that. To keep them out of, they're baffling with BS is what they're doing. It's pure bureaucratic garbage where they're regulating this out of existence, and it's wrong, and we're all getting worse service for it. So I just wanted to bring it up. I'm going to talk to Don, I think, down the road pretty soon. We'll see where this is going, because there's more announcements coming, and this is very important. It's an aspect of healthcare that's really quite immediately fixable. We can really fix this one up fairly fast and fairly easily if we could just get into that bureaucracy, find out who these gatekeepers are, push them aside, and force these changes in. Got to get it done, as people are literally dying for waiting for ambulances when they shouldn't have to. All right. And yeah, so this ongoing news, and that's really been kind of breaking today. Dave was talking about, how they were mentioned, they were described as middle-aged women who were vandalizing the Recall Gondek signs. What else do we call them? I like the term harridan. If you want to look that up, harridan. It's a fantastic descriptive term for a nasty old gal. Because again, these entitled, arrogant people, who do you think you are? You have the right to oppose the recall petition, fine. But who the hell do you think you are to go out and boldly smirk while vandalizing somebody else's property? You'd have not got that right. In fact, again, it shows why old harridans like you should have no influence on power whatsoever. You're self-entitled old crones. You should be at home with your cats cleaning urine. instead of out on the streets, damaging the property of people doing a democratic exercise. That's getting back to what I'm talking about. The establishment is terrified. People are standing up. They're getting to work. And I'll tell you what, this is really quite interesting because, look, and I've said it before and I still believe it. The recall Gondek thing, not a chance in hell this thing is going to go through. They need 514,000 signatures. I think they've only got about a week or 2 weeks left to get them. And it's just physically impossible. To be honest, I will be surprised if they have over 100,000. I'm not trying to crap on the efforts of these guys. That's what's been impressive from them, though. They have been organizing. They've been setting up all over the city. They've been engaging people. But you see, that's what's got the establishment so terrified. They know this petition isn't going to go through, but they also don't like the thought, holy cow, Calgarians are getting up and doing something. And they're interacting, and they're practicing, and they're engaging. And you know what they're doing? They're training, because the next municipal election is only a year and a half away. And these folks who, you know, who are working on this recall right now, have they're getting to know each other. You know, they're networking. Those are the ones that are going to be on the ground campaigning next time around to get rid of Gondek in the real election, not in a recall effort. So, no, I'm not opposed to this recall thing. I think it's actually done a lot of good in that it's really shaken up the establishment. I mean, they're sending their little old biddies out to attack the signs now. They got Dwayne Bratt going on a big conspiracy. Yes, yes, apparently there's other groups that have been involved. And there's not even other groups. There's this weird document, a piece of paper that Dwayne Bratt found and CTV found it worth on reporting on, that showed an organizational list. It sounds like this group is trying to put together an organization for municipal engagement, maybe the foundation of a municipal party down the road. And some of the people's background happened to be with the Take Back Alberta. I think Take Back Alberta has thousands of people who could identify as being a part of that group. It doesn't mean they're controlled by David Parker, Take Back Earl Bird, or any of that. But the conspiracies, oh dear, the conspiracies. There's groups behind this group. Yes, it's called organization, you ass clowns. This isn't all that shocking. In fact, it's the way it's supposed to work. But boy, it's got you scared, doesn't it? And that really says a lot. It really does. So, like, as I responded to CTV, because they put it out, oh, this recall isn't all it's expected to be. There's groups behind it. Did they really think that the one and only guy, the lone guy who started the ball rolling, was going to do the whole thing by himself? Of course groups are going to get involved. Doesn't mean they're controlled. Doesn't mean it's nefarious. What else is going to happen? So the groups are helping. So what? Boy, you're scared. And you're sure implying things as if there's some odd conspiracy. People wondering, I noticed commenter Valerie Cooper saying, you know, have I had the fellow on who started this whole thing? No, I tried. I booked him twice and he stood me up twice, actually. I don't think he did it out of malice. I think he just did it out of irresponsibility and not knowing how to set an alarm on his phone. Whatever. I still applaud him for getting this ball rolling and everything. But again, if people think this was some conspiratorial effort to have a giant political action going, I would think that whoever headed this thing up would be somebody a little more politically experienced and skilled than the one they have who's kind of been doing it so far. And I don't see that to be the case, you know, if you're going to pull off stunts like that with friendly media outlets. But either way, unfortunately, no, I tried speaking with him. It certainly didn't work. And well, I wish him the best. But yeah, they're thinking there's conspiracies going on. I mean, that's the whisper campaign. The other thing, though, one concern that is a little bit valid, and this is one of the things Gondek's been implying, that speaking of Harridans, and she's been talking along the lines of saying, we don't know about the privacy of the people who put their names on those forms. Okay, well, the petitioners are not supposed to use any of those signatures, any of that information, for anything else but this petition. And I've seen some people discussing that online. Oh, we should hang on to this so we can use it in the election. No, do not do that. Don't even think of doing that. Don't take pictures of it. Don't make copies of it. That's not what it's for. That would play right into Gondek's hands. If the people who signed that petition to recall Gondek suddenly are getting phone calls from a political activist group a month from now, 2 months from now, you really are going to see some problems. Use it only for this, not for data mining. You want a data mine, you start an online petition. You go knocking door to door and say, this is the purpose of me talking to you. I'd like to add you to a database to talk further. But this petition can't be used for anything except this recall. So do not do it. Don't give them that excuse. And again, this is just Gondek implying that the information on that petition is going to be misappropriated. And there's no evidence it has been or that it will be. And it shows the low level of Gondek. It shows how scared she is, though. Why are you even addressing it? If it's nothing, why are you taking the time to talk about it? Because she's scared. She's not scared of the petition, too. I mean, she doesn't know how to do economics. That's clear. But she knows enough math to know that a bunch of people are not going to get 100,000 more signatures on an official petition than even voted in the last election. Jason Kenney made the recall legislation garbage on purpose. It's an impossible barrier. We'll see how much they come up with by the end of it. But the fact that people are on the ground organizing, that's got them scared. And I think that's great. That's great. You want to make the politicians shake? I mean, it isn't even, they don't even get this nervous when there's a big protest. You know, a bunch of people waving signs outside of City Hall or at a park or anything. No. These are people working on the ground, knocking on doors. These are people talking with each other. These are people campaigning. That's got them frightened. And that should be applied more to our provincial and federal politics too, guys. We can do better if we get off our butts. We do have the mechanisms. We do. Our system has a lot of flaws, but it is still a democracy. And if we use the tools we've got, we can make it a heck of a lot better. So these guys are doing a good job as far as that goes. And it's got these clowns frightened, and I think it's fantastic. So we'll watch as this continues to develop. We'll see what other kind of conspiracy theories Dwayne and CTV can come up with. But it's not going to save this mayor. You know, again, in a year and a half, we're going to have a municipal election. I hope there's a party in place or parties in place to really hit. It's not just Gondek. She's got a few of those clowns on council. They're just terrible, terrible. And it's not just Calgary. You know, again, so people say, why is Alberta so conservative in every other way except municipally? Because we let it get that way. It's our own fault. It's fair enough. But now there's people getting people off their butts, and it's going to work. All right. Let's talk about some of the other garbage, right? This is stuff coming from the Taxpayers Federation, COP28, you know, the big climate gathering where they go to live in the lap of luxury, flying first class across the world, burning more fuels in 1 week than most families would probably do in a year or two, each of them doing that much. So taxpayers, that one so far, they found $1.35 million. That's what it cost us to fly a bunch of people over to hang out in Dubai and rub shoulders and rub whatever else these guys rub on each other while they talk about how we're going to tax the world into a better climate. And one of the bills within it was an $1,822 a night hotel room. $1,822 a night. You know, two nights in that hotel is more than my typical full vacation budget. Yet somebody, they haven't said who yet, somebody stayed in this $1,820. You would think they were so busy at this thing that would it matter? Did you really need an $1,800 room? I mean, you're so important. All you need is a comfortable bed, don't you? These guys are robbing us, folks. They're screwing us. And yes, the hypocrisy is galling. And this is what you work for. This is what you pay extra at the pump for. This is what you pay GST for. This is what comes off your paycheck for. So guys like this can stay in $1,800 a night hotel rooms and tell you what to do because you're the bad one for daring to drive a car to work to make money to pay for this jerk. Yeah, this country's broken. This is why we've got to get up and not just screaming and waving signs on the street, but getting active in the political process. And as I said, we've got the process there, and I just think it's great seeing people getting up and doing it. Let's see them do it more. Every province, every city, every... Just do it. Get out there. We can make it work. We can change it. Just look what they're doing to us as a price for our apathy right now. And again, let's just see how bad government is at running things. The Trans Mountain expansion line has been shut down yet again. Yes, they found a red-tailed hawk near the line, or a nest for a red-tailed hawk. Now, people who might not understand, red-tailed hawks are almost as common as sparrows. They're everywhere. They are not endangered in the slightest sort of way. The nest, big deal. They nest right next to farmhouses. You can make a bit of noise. It'll be fine. But you know who found it? It was an indigenous environmental monitor. For those who've worked in the oil field, you know, and I hate to say it, but most of these monitors you hire, you're just giving an elder a bunch of money to stand around and feel better about himself so they stay out of your hair while you get the job done. Unfortunately, once in a while, they feel like getting in there and trying to find something. And this one came out and found evidence of a red-tailed hawk and shut down this multi-billion-dollar pipeline again. This thing's going to, it's just brutal what it's going to cost us by the time it's done. Only government can run it this bad. And just remember, as this thing's getting up to $40 billion in years past schedule, we could have had this built for $4 billion, totally on private funds. All Trudeau had to do was get out of the bloody way. That's all he had to do. But he couldn't do that. Governments, authoritarian governments, they can't leave it alone. They can't get out of the way. They're incapable of it. All right. I'm going to get out of your way. That's all the time I've got for today, guys. Be sure to tune in tonight. The pipeline will be on. We'll be breaking down a few more issues and talking about many more things. And yeah, keep active, guys. Keep those politicians accountable. Keep screaming and hollering at them. They need it. And keep tuning in here. So thank you very much for tuning in today, guys. I'll see you next week at this time.
Canadian Shooting Sports Association. Without the CSSA, our gun rights would have been taken long, long ago. These guys are on the front lines helping to draft smart and intelligent firearms regulations and legislation in Canada. And more importantly, educating the public about how we keep guns out of the hands of the wrong people. To become a member, it's absolutely worth every penny.